How many of you guys know that song? Oh, look at that. Isn't that beautiful? You know, I was thinking last week, how do I start tonight? And the second I thought it, the second I thought about what we're talking about tonight, that song came to mind. There is no song in history, I think, that better speaks to the longing that a person has for the other person in their life than that song. I mean, I would walk 500 miles, and then I would walk 500 more just to be the man that walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. I mean, that is awesome. Ladies, how many of you guys feel good? Come on, let's see the hands. I see. Pay attention, guys, all right? I mean, listen, tonight we are going to step into where we left off last week as we step into this beautiful collection of love poetry, of love songs brought together that literally is called the best of the best, the best of Solomon. Solomon wrote over 1,000 songs, and this is called the Songs of Solomon. I mean, these are the top ones. And what do they deal with? They deal with the beautiful experience of a man and a woman falling in love, and a man and a woman coming together under the covenant of marriage and experiencing the fullness and freedom of that covenant. And that is exactly what we're dealing with. And just as a reminder to you guys, tonight, I think I'm looking around, I think we're good, but as always, tonight is a PG night. We're dealing with a book that the Jewish boys and girls couldn't read until they were 14, and there's good reason for it, because it deals with themes and ideas that are exclusively designed to be part of the adult world of marriage. And so we step into the story as we go. Now tonight, just so that you know, we are going to be stepping into a world tonight, a world of longing, a world that we will experience through these songs and through this poetry, two people that are longing for one another. And just as a reminder to you, as we travel through the early parts of this particular collection of love songs, we are in a place where the covenant has not yet come to bear. They have not yet come to a place where they're married. They're just in the process of longing. So for those of us that are not married in this place, this is a perfect time to listen in to what that experience should look like and should feel like as we walk into the beauty of this relationship. But at the same time, for those of you that are married, hey, listen closely, because everything they're longing for, you don't have to long for, because you already have it. So now you got to enjoy it. And if you're not enjoying it, you're blowing it. You're missing it. So you got to jump in and enjoy the world that they are longing for in this. Now, as we step into this process, as we walk into this, we're going to be in the Song of Solomon, which in your Bibles is found about in the middle. So grab your Bibles and turn there with me, because this is where we're going to spend some time. We're on page 471 of our Bibles, or the Song of Songs, or Song of Solomon, in chapter 1. And we traveled last week through the first 7 verses as we made our way through that incredible start as the woman speaks and her friends are involved and the man we're about to bump into here, okay? She's still speaking now. And we're in chapter 1, verse 7. So let's jump into this, because as we jump in, I want you to notice as we walk into this what begins to happen. And I want you to keep this word in the back of your mind, this word longing, all right? Because that's what this word is. This word's going to play out for us. It says this. You remember we left off in verse 7? Tell me, you whom I love, where you graze your flocks and where you rest your sheep at midday. Why should I be like a veiled woman beside the flocks of your friends? She's saying, hey, I know you're busy, but tell me where I can find you, because I want to be where you are, and I want to make sure you are where I am, and I don't want to have to search for you. And in this beautiful, almost humorous answer, we get this answer: if you do not know, most beautiful of women, follow the tracks of the sheep and graze your young goats by the tents of the shepherds. Now, just so you guys know, I said this last week briefly, I'm not totally excited about the NIV when it comes to the Song of Solomon, all right? The NIV, which is the translation we work with, we're going to be in it because that's what we have here. But I tell you, they got some things, in terms of the breakdown, I think they got some things wrong here. And so I kind of wish we could preach out of the ESV on this one, or the NSAB, because they probably get this right better. But you just have to kind of listen in as I speak, because I'll change some things that may be in the text, not in terms of the text itself, but in terms of where they place the friends and the lover and the beloved, I think is all wrong. But in this particular case, It could be the friends saying that to her. Hey, if you want to find him, go and graze your sheep by the place where he's working. But this actually much better fits for the beginning of the lover speaking back now and jokingly, humorously saying, you want to find me? You want to find me? Well, come here into my world. Bring your sheep over here. Come and visit with me in my place. It's this beautiful, humorous invitation into the world that he has. And then he jumps right in here. Now listen to these words, verse 9. I liken you, my darling, to a mare harnessed to one of the chariots of Pharaoh. Your cheeks are beautiful with earrings and your neck with strings of jewels. And then it says, we will make you the earrings of gold studded with silver. Okay, so just so you know, right here, right? Where does he begin? This is the first we hear of the lover now. What has the woman done? She's come and she's initiated this incredible conversation to say, just so you know, I am waiting for you. I am longing for you. Go prepare a place for me and get it done fast because I don't know if I can hold out any longer. And he replies to her, Oh, just know that if you want to find me, I'm right here. I'm waiting for you. Anytime you want to swing on by, I'd love to see you. And then he says this. He says, I just want you to know that you are like a horse. It's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. Ladies, how do you feel? I mean, come on. Guys, listen, when you're reading the Song of Solomon, please understand you've got to contextualize, all right? If you do not contextualize, do not go home and say, honey, I just want you to know you look like a horse. It's not going to work, all right? What he's saying here is actually beautiful in this text because in the army of Pharaoh at this time, Pharaoh was really the other superpower outside of the superpower of Israel. And at this point, remember, this is a young man not even growing into the fullness of his empire. And he says, I want you to know something. I want you to know something. If I went to Pharaoh's army, whoa, lots of horses, lots. I mean, a million of them. And if I walk in there and I look at all of the horses that are there for his army, inside that pack, there is a mare that walks in. And she is this horse among the horses that stands apart so perfectly that when you look at her, everything about her is beautiful to you. This would have made perfect sense, especially to this woman, because in this culture, animals and horses and sheep and goats and all these things and gazelle, they all spoke deeply to the environment that they were in. And each animal represented a certain quality that just made them unique. And what he's saying here is, I want you to know something. If you took every single woman on the planet and you lined them up and you walked into the room, oh, they would all pale in comparison. I mean, you stand apart so much that it would be like looking into a pack of horses and there the mare walks in, the most beautiful of Pharaoh's horses. What this man begins to say, where he starts, and I want you to pay close attention to this, is he launches right into this. I want you to know that you are beautiful. You're beautiful. I mean, you're beautiful. Now listen, we are going to be talking in this process, listening into what the man says and listening into what the woman says. And as a big picture, they are longing for one another. But in their longing for one another, they are going to utilize a very particular bent to make sure the other person knows they long for them, all right? And what they're going to be doing here is speaking into the life of their soon-to-be spouse in exactly the way that that spouse needs to be spoken into. And men, listen to me carefully. God designed woman to feel beautiful, to be beautiful, to experience what it is like to be experienced as beautiful. And our culture has absolutely, completely destroyed any version of that. We have created such horrible versions of beauty that our woman in our cultures, across the cultures for centuries, have had to struggle to try and figure out what beautiful is. And God designed them to feel beautiful. And guess what God designed us for, guys? To keep them understanding how beautiful they are. We are the voice of reason in the woman's life to say, ignore the culture. You're beautiful. They should hear it from us all the time. When you watch that clip, you know, we love that clip, that movie, Benny and June. I mean, Brooke leaned over to me and said, we should watch that again sometime. I'm like, we should. I even like that movie. Because what's beautiful about that movie is there's a guy in that movie that is willing to do anything, as embarrassing, as ridiculous as it is, to let this woman know, all that matters to me is you. And guys, by the time you start telling your spouse you're beautiful in so many words that it is embarrassing, you have just started to get it right. When you wake up in the morning, you should walk out and wake up and go, oh, cereal made by the most beautiful woman in the world. Oh, my honey, you are so hot. Oh, I mean, I'm sweating it up right now. And when you start experiencing that right there, then you are beginning to remind her, I know you're about to walk into a culture that's going to scream at you and say, you are not beautiful. And I want you to hear my voice above all that. You are a mare among the horses. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He starts right there, and then he goes on. Listen to this. Your cheeks are beautiful with earrings, your neck with strings of jewels. So he speaks now in that beautiful sense of saying, listen, I just want you to know, because remember, she's the one that said, I'm a little dark and a little tan. I'm not sure if you're going to like me, please. And he's going, oh, when I look at you, I can just imagine the beauty of your body as we're adorning it. You know how you take something that's beautiful and you just adorn it? You put strings of pearls on it and earrings, and you're like, oh, anything I put on you just enhances the beauty that is. And then guess what the friends do? I love friends. Remember we talked about it, girls? Girls need friends, all right? As soon as the friends hear that, oh, wait, he said she needs some pearls. He says she needs gold. Look what they say. This is where the NIV messes up. Look at that. This verse 11, it's the friends. Oh, we will make you earrings of gold studded with silver. See, they're so behind this guy, remember that? That they're like, oh, he needs something around the neck. Done. Oh, we'll adorn her so that he just doesn't know what to do with himself. See, the longing begins with this person that says, I cannot wait for you to have the place ready so I can come. And his answer to that is, oh, you think you're longing? You think you can't wait? I'm working hard because you're so beautiful. I just long for you. And when I think about you and I think about the first time I can buy you that beautiful gold necklace and put it on you, it's going to look so good on you. And the friends go, well, we'll do it for her. Because we want her to look perfect for you. Now watch this. He goes on. She now steps in and she speaks. While the king was at his table. Now this word table here translated, you can also translate it couch, which really basically means when the king was reclining, all right? At the table basically means I'm done with the day. I'm sitting back. I'm relaxing. Everything is right in the world and I'm right there. And I'm just enjoying myself. I'm kind of caught up in me, right? So how often do we find ourselves there, guys? We get back from work, and it's been a long day, and what do you need? Just give me my recliner, and just give me something, just let me relax, right? Perfectly appropriate, right? We come home, and we're like, oh, I just need some peace and quiet. It's been a long day. And this is what she says. She says, oh, while you were at your table reclining, my perfume spread its fragrance. I love that. Do you see what she's saying? Ladies, are you listening into this? I long for you, and my longing is just not something that I have. It is something I act on. I act on this. Listen, when I saw you reclining at the table, oh, I was strategic. Did you hear that? I mean, my perfume spread its fragrance, and when you smelled it, I mean, what are you going to do against that, you know? I mean, listen, in this culture, perfume was everything. In fact, perfume was something very rare. And remember, this is not a culture where you showered in the morning and showered in the afternoon and showered in the evening, right? This is a culture where you just, smells and things were different, you know? And so perfume was something that you threw on a very special occasion because you wanted that perfume to make you stand out from the rest. And what she's saying here is, listen, when you come and you recline, I just want you to know the perfume's coming out. I mean, when that stuff hits you, you're going to want to stop reclining, all right? And so she says, even from the beginning, my longing drove me to make sure that I was making your world a place where you would long for me. Do you see what's happening here? She longs for him, he longs for her. So what does she do? She creates deeper longing for him, and he creates deeper longing for her. And so these two are constantly increasing in longing. It's kind of getting crazy. And when we get married, we forget this, folks. Us husbands, we forget how deeply our wives need to hear, "You are stunning." And we forget, ladies, how desperately our husbands need us to pull them out of their world that they've gotten stuck in, the stress and the strain and the work and the things. And we need to drag them out of that and say, "Hello, I'm right here. Do you smell the perfume?" And that ain't gonna come easy. But you step into that and it works. Watch this. She says, "My lover is to me a sachet of myrrh resting between my breasts." Now, and of course, the language here starts getting interesting, because even the language, that's what I love about love poems, right? The language starts speaking of things that cause people to start longing. You know, you're like, "Oh, I think I heard the word. There it was. I feel like I'm already captured," right? I mean, let's just be honest with each other here, right? So she says, "Listen, I want to tell you something. When I think of you, it is like this myrrh that rests right here on my chest around my neck." And what the myrrh would do, actually it was a spice, it was beautiful, and the heat of the body would melt it, would cause it to melt a little bit, and it would create a fragrance. So you would wear it around your neck, and then as you basically sweat, it would create fragrance. It was almost like a perfume, but it was fragrance for yourself, not for other people. And so she says, "Listen, I want you to know, you are the fragrance around my neck. When I start feeling all fuzzy inside and I start getting all hot, the smells I smell are you." Isn't that amazing? She says, I long for you so much that it is like you sit right here as a constant reminder to me. Ladies, let me ask you. Men, let me ask you. How often do we go through our entire day without a thought for our spouse? Let's just be honest for a second. Or if we have a thought for them, it ain't a happy one. "Can't believe he didn't do that before he left. I can't believe I got to go home to that crazy house." Right? And here she says, "I just want you to know that if I so much as sweat, I smell your fragrance." I mean, it's right there instantly. "I think about you all the time." Listen to this. "My lover is to me a cluster of henna blossoms from the vineyards of En Gedi." Now, En Gedi is an interesting place. En Gedi was actually an oasis, a garden inside of the desert. And this garden was known as a beautiful place where you would go if you just wanted to get out of the desert and come to where the water and the fruit and the wonder was. And these little blossoms would blossom during season, and the fragrance would spread throughout the desert, and you could actually know, wow, the blossoms are blooming in En Gedi. It is time to go and visit. And she says, "I just want you to know that when I think of you, I think of oasis, I think of safety, I think of my safe place in the desert of my life. I just can't wait to run to you because you are my safety. You are my happy place." And she says to him, "I think about you all the time. I long for you all the time. When I think of the desert I find myself in," and she's a shepherdess, remember? And she's poor, remember? So she finds herself in the desert every day. She gets beaten down by the sun. And she says, "When I'm there and the sun is beating down and I'm sweating up a storm, I just want you to know I think about you and you sit right here. And then I think about you and I think about an oasis." Isn't that beautiful? And men, listen to me now. If you want to live as a husband biblically, as God calls us out, you have to become your wife's safe place. You do. You have to be the place where she knows she is always protected. Always protected. You are the oasis in her world. Because not only do you constantly protect her beauty and her reputation, but you protect her and she is your safe place. It's funny, last week, Brooke said to me, my lovely wife here, we're doing Song of Solomon, and we're like, "Woo, here we go." And she's scared, okay? Because I get up to stuff on the stage, and I throw stuff out at you guys, and then it gets all weird, and she gets all embarrassed. And so she said to me, "I ask one favor, one, just one. If you're going to say something that's going to embarrass me, just give me a heads up, okay? I just want to know beforehand so that I'm not surprised by it. And I go, no problem, honey, I've got it. I'm not going to embarrass you. She goes, oh, I know you better than that. Just tell me that you're going to do it before you do it so that I know, okay? Because Brooke and I exist in a world where we want our lives to be a light to you guys. And where we struggle, we want you to see. And where we enjoy, we want you to see. And so she knows. In the world we live in, we like to share our world with you. But it is a delicate balance, isn't there? Because there has to be a place in our world that she knows this stage never gets to have a part of. Because that's her life and her reputation and her heart. And she has to know that I'm willing to do anything to protect that, right? So last week, what do? That's beautiful, isn't it? I mean, Renaud can dig a hole so fast, it's unbelievable. So last week, we're here, and I'm thinking the whole time, I have got to get these people out of the box and have them start enjoying themselves. Because here's the thing, right? I mean, I told you last week, we live in a world where in the Christian world, modesty and things are called to. And let me just tell you something. Modesty is an incredibly important thing. You know why? Because modesty protects you for your spouse. Are you hearing me? Married woman, if you're modest, you're protecting yourself for your spouse from all those other maniacs out there, all right? And single woman, if you're modest, you're protecting yourself for your future spouse. But here's where we forget ourselves. We are not protecting ourselves from our husband, okay? Modesty ends when you walk in the door. And at that point, it's got to switch from modesty to nothing. You with me? And so you have got to start thinking that way. So last week, I'm like, I have got to make sure these people get it. So I get up here, and what do I say? Ladies, make it worth his while when he gets home. I mean, try cellophane. Trust me. And Brooke goes, what are you doing? What are you doing? People are going to think I walk around in cellophane. And I go, honey, it wasn't about you. I know we never did that, but I just thought it was a good idea. And she goes, well, you got to tell them next week that I never did that. And I'm like, all right. So listen, it's really funny, but let me get serious for a second, all right? There is nothing that means more to me in this place than the reputation of this woman in the front row. She is one of the most amazing women you will ever meet. She has the balance of modesty and being a wife like nobody I've never met. She does a brilliant job at being a wife and a brilliant job at being a woman of God. And I will die to protect her reputation. And men, you have to live in that place. You have to be willing to say, I'll do anything to protect my wife. Because the world will go after her. And you have to make sure they don't get to touch her. When Brooke has issues with a salesperson or a thing and she has to call back, she often says to me, would you just make the call for me? I don't want to deal with that person. And I better go, yes, thank you for the privilege. I want to do that because I will protect you from anything out there that's trying to make you miserable. When you walk down the street, guys, you ought to walk on the side of the road where the cars are and hold her hand. So when a car veers off and hits someone, it's you that dies. That's our call. Your wife needs to know that you exist to protect her and keep her safe, and that you will do it in both your words and your actions, and you will set your reputation aside and suck up your pride to make sure that she knows that you honor her emotionally and physically and spiritually in every way. And when you do, she will say of you, when I think of you, you are the oasis of my life. I long to be where you are because you are my safe place in the desert. It doesn't stop there. Watch this. The lover now speaks, the man. And what does he say? He's changed his tune, right? Oh, beautiful, how beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful your eyes are like doves. Okay, so let me just make a point here. What did he say previously? How beautiful you are. What's he saying again? Oh, how beautiful you are. Gentlemen, your wives will not believe you when you tell her how beautiful she is. Then you'll have to say it again and she will still not believe you. Then you'll say it a third time and she still won't believe you and she'll argue with you and she'll go, no, I'm not. And you'll go, yes, you are. You're amazing. You're just saying that. I'm not. I promise. I know I'm not beautiful. I'll try another language. Try French. It works. You know, just do something. Say something. But he gets it. He gets it. He goes, I have one job in this world, and that is to make sure you know you're beautiful, no matter what anybody else tells you. And gentlemen, just as a side note, if you come up to me and you say, I just want you to know, I want to say my wife is beautiful, but I'm not sure that I feel that way, or I'm not sure that she feels that way. Let me tell you something. You tell her enough that she's beautiful, and she'll start acting like it, I promise you. Women need to know that beauty is defined for you by who they are and who you see them to be. Listen to this. The beloved now says in response, how handsome you are, my lover. Oh, how charming. Our bed is a verdant. Now, here's the deal. This is where the NIV again goes. I'm like, what are you doing here? The lover here is not the next speaker. It's still her saying, the beams of our house are cedars. Our rafters are firs. It is unbelievable when you read the commentaries on this, the things they come up with. On the one hand, you got commentaries that make everything sexual in this book. Oh, I'll describe to you what the firs are and what the beams are and what the cedars are. And you're like, what? And then there's the other side that makes everything allegorical. Thank you. That got me. All right, here we go, right? And so they go that direction. And they're like, oh, no. The Bible would never speak of things like that. Well, let me tell you, they're both wrong most of the time, right? Because here in this case, just think about what she's saying. This is a bad English translation too, in many ways. What this is really saying is that our bed and our house and our rafters are green and they're furs and they're out there. She is saying to her beloved, I just want you to know our love is so big that there is no house that can hold it. Our love is all around, because where does she live? She just spoke of an oasis. She just spoke of a place in the desert, and she says, our love to me is everywhere. Our bed is green. It's the grass around us, and our house are the palm trees and the cedars. I mean, it's just wherever you go, our love is there. Our love is not bound to a house. And I want you to know, this is back to that same thing that the Bible keeps telling us, guys. Your marriage is under attack, and you will stop thinking about it, because the enemy does not want you to enjoy your marriage or your spouse. And the enemy will do anything he can to make you stop longing for your spouse. And this is her saying, wherever I go, when I leave our house, your love goes with me. Our house of love is much bigger than that little place we live in. It's everywhere. And now she begins, listen to this. Chapter 2, verse 1. I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. That's an interesting thing to say, isn't it? Just so you know, when you read this in the poetry, in the context of what's happening here, this is the woman's tease. Have you ever had that before? You know, when the woman goes, do I look good tonight? I'm beautiful, aren't I? It's that little moment where the woman's heard it enough now, where she's willing to step out and say, you do think I'm beautiful, don't you? Guys, when that moment occurs, it's all or nothing right there, all right? Do not mess that moment up. You never recover from that. Well, you could recover, but it takes years of counseling, all right? You got to get this one right. When your wife says to you, I look beautiful, don't I? This is how you reply. Are you ready for this? Like a lily among thorns is my darling among the maidens. She just said, I'm like a lily, aren't I? At least a lily. Like a rose of Sharon. And he goes, oh, forget about that. Let me tell you what you are. If you are standing in a room and every other woman in the place is standing in the room, let me tell you the difference. You are the lily, they are the thorns. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're so horrible that it's not even worth it. In fact, they're prickly. I don't even want to go near them. You are just that amazing. And guys, again, we're back here. I just got to tell you, we're back here to that place where God is telling us, gentlemen, you have been given a princess, and your job is to make sure she stays a princess in her heart, and that you are constantly telling her that she is your princess. And all that you do, when you walk 500 miles, when you go to work, when you spend your money, whatever it is you do it for your princess. That's right. Because what would life be without a princess? A warrior prince without a princess is lost. He's got nothing. Who does he rescue? Who does he protect? Who does he spend his money on? Who does he work for? It's a pointless exercise. But now God has given him a princess. And oh, it's all worth it now. And if you don't feel that way as a husband, you have forgotten yourself. And you have forgotten your calling. And you have forgotten what matters on this planet. And if you've forgotten it, I guarantee you that she is forgetting it too, because you are not telling her if you've forgotten it. Husbands, we got to leave this place, and we've got to relearn if we have to. That our wife has to know that everything we do for her. That's the truth. And yeah, we love Jesus, and we do everything we do for him, no matter what it is, including loving her. But the reality is, when it comes to this planet, Jesus told us first and foremost, husbands, love your wives as I love the church. So he answers her, like a lily among thorns is my darling among the maidens. And what is her response to that? You ready for this? This is how she responds. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my lover among young men. See, look at what's happening. When the husband says to the wife, and in this case, when the lover says to the soon-to-be wife, you are so beautiful. You stand apart. She goes, you too. You're so amazing. But look, she goes differently. She doesn't say, you're so beautiful too. She says, he's an apple tree. You're like, huh, that's... Wow, I'm an apple tree among the trees. You're a lily among the thorns. I think I win. But listen to what she says. It goes on. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. He has taken me to the banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Strengthening me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. His left arm is under my head, and his right arm embraces me. This is a perfect picture, folks, of a woman that says, my husband to be is the one who will keep me safe and provide for me and be my sustenance and be my joy. He will put his arm under my head as a pillow, and his intimacy will embrace me, and he will be my apples in a forest of fir trees, and he will be my shade in the sun, and he will be my protector. Ladies, listen to me. God designed men to be princes, to rescue their princesses. And when your husband forgets that you need him to keep him, to keep you safe and to rescue you and to provide for you, he will forget himself, and he will work for work's sake, and he will forget you. But as long as he knows that when he goes off to do what he does, you go, oh, you are my apple tree. And when you come home, I will be waiting for you, because your perfume is right between my breasts and I smell it all the time, and I can't wait for you to get home. And when you come, I promise you, my perfume will do its work and we will enjoy our marriage. And when we do that, each of us goes to what we're called to, and we go with the longings of our heart met, because it is about the other person. And then she says these beautiful words, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. Now she takes a moment and she says to her friends, help me, help me. I'm going to go crazy. And I'm going to do something I shouldn't, because we're not married yet. And I can't think about it anymore. You've got to hold me back, because my love cannot be awakened fully until the time when it is ready. And she says to her husband-to-be, I will honor our love by holding it safe until we are in the covenant where we can release it fully. And she tells her friends, help me. When you are in that place where you are working toward marriage, you should surround yourself with friends that honor marriage, so that they will keep you in a place where you honor marriage. Your love will awaken in good time, and you will have many longings before that time comes, but do not let your longings awaken before they are ready, because you will give away your soul in a way you don't want to. And God has a better plan than that. So, Let me close out with this thought. I mean, I want to go on. There's so much more. I'm just getting excited now, but we can't. So we'll have to come back next week and continue. But let me just tell you this. If I look at all of this and I think about what this means, it culminates in one place for me. If I could leave you with one thought as you listen to these love poems and you listen to the longings between these two and you see how perfectly they meet the needs of each other in their words by saying, you're beautiful, oh, you're a provider, oh, you're beautiful, oh, you're a protector, oh, you're beautiful, oh, you're awesome, oh, you're beautiful. I mean, it's just back and forth, and what are they pointing to all the time? They are pointing to the one thing that they know that that person needs to hear from them to know that they matter. And let me tell you something. Spouses, are you listening? Your job in your marriage is to make sure that you are constantly pointing out the best in your spouse. You are pointing it out to them, you are pointing it out to yourself, and you are pointing it out to the rest of the planet. Oh, let me tell you about my spouse. Oh, sit back, ladies, because you're about to get jealous. That's how it should be. Husbands, you ought to be standing around listening into conversation and going, oh, these poor men, if only they had my wife. Yeah. We ought to be spending our time pointing out the best in each other, which means that you ought to be spending your time looking for the best in your spouse, because what you look for, you will find. Your spouse is broken in some places, yes. And if you want to find the brokenness, go for it. You'll find it. It's there. And you can spend all the time you want on it, and you can tell them about it and tell the world about it and remind them about it constantly. It's okay. But don't be surprised when they recline in their recliner and your perfume does nothing. And men, don't be surprised when you come home and your wife goes, we got four kids and a lot of stuff and we're busy and you got to get in the game and why didn't you clean the garage? If you can't bring out the best in your spouse, then they will have a tough time bringing out the best in you. But if you spend your time looking for what's best in them and pointing it out, like these two managed to do, I promise you, the vibrance of your marriage will increase dramatically. And the fun of your marriage will increase dramatically. So for some of you, this is going to be a six-month journey back to that. It's going to be awkward and weird. The first time you tell your wife she's beautiful, she's going to look at you like you're crazy. Because it's been about a year and a half or 10 years, who knows. And she's going to go, oh, you just heard that message, didn't you? And you're going to go, I did. And I know it's not the best, but I'm going to start here. Because what did I tell you? Men, we set aside our pride for the sake of the reputation of our wives. We tell them they're beautiful, even if they don't want to hear it, and even if it's been a long time. And we show them. And we let them know that when we go to work, we think about them. And wives, your husband ought to know that you think about him constantly, that you long for him. You know what a husband wants to know? That his wife longs for him. That when he gets home, she doesn't long for a helper. She longs for a husband, and he will be your helper, I promise you. If he is reclined and your perfume has done its work and you ask him to do the dishes, he will do them twice. But just know that when you're pointing out the best in your spouse, the best will come to bear. It will come out. I'll give you one other thing, one other thought. Don't just point the best out in your spouse. Don't just point it out. But make sure you bring it out. Bring it out. If your spouse is struggling with something, help them become the best they can be. If your husband is stressed and tired and completely lost at work and things are falling apart, don't become part of the problem. Help bring the best out in him. Remind him that he is a warrior to you. It doesn't matter that the world's telling him he's not right now. It doesn't matter that he lost his job. It doesn't matter that that's not the point. He is your warrior. And he's good enough for you and you love him. And you tell him that enough, man, and it doesn't matter what the world tells him. He will walk around feeling great. And husbands, if your wife is struggling with what they see in the world and struggling with their physical appearance and they want to get fit and they want to do this, but it's tough because there's kids and there's life, and you make it happen for them. You create a world for them where they can become their best, and you let them become whatever their best is, and you don't try to tell them what it should be. And I promise you, your marriages will increase in all the ways that they need to. You guys got to help each other, man. This is a rough world we live in. And before you get married, the enemy wants one thing, for your love to awaken before it is supposed to. And once you get married, the enemy wants one thing, for your love to stay dead. And we have to fight back and say, oh, no. So when you leave this place tonight, husbands, you figure out how to let your wife know that she is beautiful. I mean, get a little creative for crying out loud, please. Don't go, you're beautiful. That ain't gonna do it. Not now, because you heard the message. Now you gotta take it to the next level. And wives, you make sure that you figure out how to let your husband know that you long for him because he is a warrior. It's not difficult, trust me. Figure it out. And you start speaking into each other's best and pointing out each other's best. And when we get back next week, we're going to see where that takes us, because it's going to get really interesting now. Our PG-13 week is on its way. We're not even there yet. So let's pray.